Yeah, that's fine with me.
It's good pro. It's good content. Not yet, not yet. But the welcome to the Regeneration Podcast, friends and family. It's been a while, my friend. We haven't talked since maybe the last podcast with was it John Vervaeke? No,
I think didn't we do one after that?
Oh, on Modern Love, yeah.
On Modern Love, that's right.
So we've both obviously been so busy. You know, we haven't even like texted as much, although we do have a lot of guests kind of lined up. What's been keeping you busy too? All of a sudden, these weeks just passed.
Well, it's spring and I live on a farm.
Say no more.
So my barn is full of baby animals, baby chicks and ducks.
How many chicks?
30.
Okay.
20.
Do you buy your feed from a grain store, you know, like laying pellets, or how do you feed?
I get my feed from the Amish.
Okay.
There's a Amish farmer, I don't know, 15 miles away, not even that. Yeah. He's got feed. So that kind of stuff's going on. Plus, I gotta show you.
I think I know what you're gonna show, and I'm super excited. No valise, I hope.
Nope.
No, okay. Well, then you've got a couple of things to show us, I think.
This.
All right, describe it. It's beautiful. It's a different shape than I've seen.
It's a Westbury 12-string guitar, 1520.
1520,
that's the model number. They could have picked a cooler name.
I thought it was a design of an old lute from the year 1520.
Yeah, I bought that guitar in 1980, the day after my graduation party, because I had $350 and it was burning a hole in my pocket, and I bought a guitar. Yeah. And here's the funny, gosh, probably 30 years ago, somebody broke into my house and stole all of my gear.
Wow.
I had some really nice guitars, but they're all gone. And they stole the case for this one, but this one was not in the case. Mm. So I don't know how they couldn't figure out it's a light guitar. but it hasn't been playing well for a long time, at least 20 years.
Okay.
And played a few gigs with the Corktown Popes over the last year.
Okay.
You know, kind of special gigs. I don't want to do it on a regular.
People can look up Michael with the Corktown Popes on YouTube.
That's right. And the bass player that's been playing with us, a wonderful human being named Dave Juracek, it also does guitar repair and stuff like that. And so we're at this rehearsal. I said, hey, I got this 12-string. You think you can take a look at it? And I gave it to him, and he fixed it. It's beautiful. Can't believe how happy I am.
Oh, I'm so happy for you. It reminded me of like when we were talking about Modern Love. It was such a simple thing you said. Two things you said in the last couple podcasts have stayed with me. One time we were talking about, you know, Michael, it might have been on the phone, but it was, I was just talking about like in church, you know, I work for the church, but if we were to kind of reconstitute anything, if we brought back a Michaelmas Day thing, you were just emphatic. It seemed like in your blood, so clearly you could see, but don't do it in a church hall because people act weird when they're anywhere around church. That stayed with me. Can you unpack that a little bit? I mean, it is what it is. I'm not saying.
Well, it's so true. I think church, whether it's church hall or a school, there's kind of an egregore that drops over, right?
Yeah, right.
There's kind of a, and it's not necessarily bad, but it's also not open. And so, to my mind, when you have these, you know, kind of spontaneous and informal gatherings, mm-hmm. There's not the onus of, well, you're at church, or, well, you're at the school, where you can't, right? You can't do that.
Not on clock time necessarily. Like it begins at 4:00. Show up.
Yeah.
You know.
And so, yeah, we're on fluid time with those kinds of
things. It's
kind of
like a school meets a living room, you know, a church hall. Happened, like, you know.
So, and I think that's, I mean, I'm sure, you know, the danger for me is when things get too formalized, people have expectations about what it's supposed to be like.
Right.
Right. And just that expectation, I think you could say is is an aspect of the egregore. I mean, where does that expectation come from? Because that expectation also tells you, like a little voice in your head, what you can and can't say.
Right.
Right. So, so that's why I think it can't be in the church hall.
Yeah.
It's too domesticated.
No, you need to know how eloquent that was. I mean, for that listener, see, it's so natural to you to speak like that. For that was even still you unpacking that. There was a lot I learned from that 30. You know, yeah. I was, what was it in? Oh, it might have been Emil Bach's book on the liturgical year, which both have. But you get a sense
right over there
from reading it. He has on Golgotha and the Grail that the Grail might have been constituted by really deep conversation, right? Like these people felt a oneness because starting with the conversations between Mary and Jesus prior to the 3 years,
yeah,
and also the conversation like at the foot of the cross between Mary and the beloved disciple, that some stream that it went to, in this case, it went to Joseph of Arimathea and Longinus, you know, if that's how it's pronounced, you know, that then this conversation, and maybe that Longinus is that warrior spirit, you know, the guy who stabbed the side of Christ. But I love this image that you could cement that thing we feel of is so tight, it's almost like a metal ring in the Knights of the Round Table, is really just a bond of conversation. Again, that flowing between a real intersubjectivity. And that could be lost in a parish hall where you could have it more likely in a home setting.
Right? Well, in all those kinds of settings, a hierarchy may not be imposed, but it's implied, right?
right.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's just how it is.
No,
and
do a phenomenology. You should do a phenomenology of like church buildings and things.
You
just
could.
Like you did your land for your book of poetry.
Oh yeah, that came out since the last time we spoke, I think.
Yeah, and your introduction to Novalisism.
And I haven't seen the Novalis yet. I don't even know if it's for sale yet.
Okay.
But Meditations in or wrong book, Mythologies to the of
and
the
don't you
Wild
think,
of
Michael,
God.
That like I think that conversation you just spoke of like church halls, you have a our listeners could say you have a gift to bring by like reading the atmospheres of spaces and things. And so you did this with your own land.
I did. And the other thing is, see that artwork right there?
Who did it? Oh, you know who it is. It's guest, twice blessed, Lindsay Rose.
Fan favorite, Lindsay Rose. And get this. So yesterday, I visited two of our former guests, Katie Hartsock and Jonathan Geltner.
Okay, great people.
Because I was on my way to pick up my guitar, and they live on the way, and I wanted to drop off Katie's copy of this because she's one of my jacket endorsees.
That's really cool.
Endorsers, I should say. And what Katie said, and I'm gonna, Lindsay, if you're watching, you gotta come clean with us. Katie thinks the deer is me as a deer.
okay, so hold it back a little bit. Let me see. I guess I'd have to, you know, you're showing it clearly to the camera. I'm just not taking in the gestalt, you know. So I'm gonna look it up online, and next week I'll give you my feedback on whether Katie's right or not. Yeah.
And
so Katie's much more perceptive than me. She's a
and
poet,
you know who?
So.
Speaking of another guest of ours, actually another two of our former guests are also on the back of this book, Martin Shaw.
Yeah.
And Daniel Polakoff.
Yep, I saw those blurbs.
And,
I still, you know what? Here, Martin Shaw, if you don't mind a little hyperlinking, then we'll come back. So Martin Shaw, I was at a funeral of my, I've mentioned him, beloved mentor, Father Ed Dillon, about 6 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Then a priest, listener of this podcast, Father Ken Arnold. No, Ken Kirkman. I'm so sorry. There's a deacon in my diocese, Ken Arnold. Father Ken Kirkman, who is a student at Geneseo. He listens to the Regeneration podcast. He just dropped in conversation at the reception for this funeral, this notion of 12 secret names for a tree. You know, that came from Martin Shaw. What a great spiritual discipline instead of all this kind of lachrymose piety. And then I thought of another one as I was reading my favorite, this John Cooper Powys. He was saying that the way we react with nature phenomenologically is not sexual, but it would be more like eating every day. So every day he goes outside, he uses those senses because he wrote a book called On Growing Old, or The Philosophy of Growing Old, right? I'm convinced it's an esoteric masterpiece where he's just using that hanger upon which to throw these wild insights. But he would say that as we age, we have to find that relationship with the universe that a baby has, just looking around in that, but at a much higher level. Mm-hmm. But he would say that's a spiritual discipline then. But he would say every day you walk out of doors, and you could do this on your farm, Mike. He said there's a touch of the day, kind of the warmth, the smell of the day, of course. And then what would be the third one he used, that might seem a little, the touch of the day, the smell of the day, and the taste of the day, and, every day register that. And he, because he's so gifted, he could go into nuances with the day I experienced this morning that I could never see. But that's still for our listeners. Some people have asked me about this, like embodied practices. Mm-hmm. These are practices, 12 secret names for a tree. I've tried it a couple of times since his episode. Some trees I call the three aunties on a, there's these three oak trees that I look at. And I could come up with four, but I started to fudge it after that. Mm-hmm. And so Martin Shaw sees more than I do.
Yeah. Well, actually speaking of that, so as you know, my latest book is full of this kind of stuff.
Yeah, right.
In the woods around us in the recreation area, there's a section that used to be farm, which the state probably bought 80 years ago during the Depression, maybe more, 80 some years ago. And there's still like hedgerows out there, windbreaks, but mostly just kind of like wild meadow. And once in a while, the state will go through there and plow it up so it doesn't get overgrown with trees and make a good habitat for hunting. But I went on a long walk there a couple weeks ago. Around where we live, there are a lot of marshes. So I had to go around the marsh, and I went down as far as I could go before having to walk through a marsh again. And there was this beautiful grove of oaks and maples. Hmm. And I invite people to try this, because I tried it. So I just found this one tree was just so beautiful. I didn't touch it, but I put my hands close to it till I could feel its energy. Mm-hmm. Maybe about 8 inches away or so. And it works. I mean, if you try this, maybe I'm just super sensitive to that, but you can feel something. Mm-hmm. And then I came home, and I have an electroculture post in one of my gardens. And I tried to do it around there, and I didn't feel anything. Not like I felt around the tree, which was kind of interesting.
Yeah, you bet.
And the other thing I should mention before we move on. Well, first, believe it or not, speaking to another guest, In fact, her album just dropped a couple days ago. Olivia Cheney.
Yeah. What's the name of the new album?
And as thank you to her, for all the kindness she did to us, I sent her a copy of the book.
Wow.
And she emailed me. I hadn't heard from her in a while, but she emailed me thanking me and telling me when she emailed me, I said, it's going to take a long time to get there. But it only took 5 days, which shocked me.
Isn't that the thing about the post office? It's not that they're fast or slow. They're beguiling. Something mm-hmm. something takes months and something else is there without paying overnight delivery. It's there in a day.
But anyway, so listeners of the Regeneration Podcast, if you like that interview we do with Olivia, her album's out now. You can get it. It's even available in vinyl. That is so retro.
Buy both Michael's book and Olivia's new CD. Just her work, and you'd be doing a good thing with each one.
Yeah, and during this hiatus, believe it or not, Mike, I've been getting emails from people who are big listeners of the show.
I hope he's listening. John McCormick is his name. Just a kid from Rochester who called me at my
John.
Office.
Yeah.
This is a different one.
I think I know John.
No, this is a different one. So there's one we have in common on Facebook friends. This is just a guy who, a wild story growing up in Rochester that someday he'll be on the podcast. He's really great with embodiment, so that's a theme, obviously, but he's so good. And what his story from just being so bored at a grammar school, dropping out of high school, just starting to work with his hands, getting tired every day, getting lost. It's wild. But you know, so the, again, probably what you're experiencing, you just get an email or a phone call, then you meet these guys and you talk to them, these listeners, and they're awesome.
So I want to give a shout out to Rebecca and Jared, who you meet this week. And I think Jared's in England. I'm not sure. Rebecca is for sure in England.
What's the basic sentiment that Jared and Rebecca are sending?
Oh, they just like, I mean, I think they like what we're doing.
Yeah.
And they even like when we bullshit like this.
That's an increasing thing I get. People
That's
are,
right.
In a beautiful way, they're looking for camaraderie or an ease of exchange, you know.
Now, I got another question for you,
bring
Mike.
It on. Bring it on.
I don't know if you have noticed, I'm sure you have, that our engagement has dropped slightly since Larry was on the show talking about,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because that we got kicked off for that one.
Real tricky. No. And I got some type of warning even yesterday about advanced
really?
Features. Yeah. It didn't specify anything in particular, but that shall not be named, I guess. Well, I got to think it through. We'll talk sometime.
We can always move to Substack. They have a pretty decent podcast platform.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. So take that. Yeah.
I knew I just wanted to catch up with you and hear how you're doing. I had to do a number of kind of over Lent, some different mission talks at churches and so forth. I'm somewhat, you know, I can speak to a younger audience. I think most people over 60 have no idea what I'm talking about. But then there's other people like professed religious who are friends of mine who just get everything. And I don't know, is it a dialect of, apart from the fact that I talk too fast and I apologize to our listeners, the way of getting at some of the stuff that we do on the Regeneration podcast about, I think 60% of the population are just non-conductors for it, you know?
It's weird, you know, because I remember there was somebody I wanted to interview who didn't want to do it because we're not slow enough.
Okay.
And I'm like, you guys talk so fast. It's like, I'm from Detroit, man. That's how we talk.
And the younger generation, not that you and I are super young, but they do talk faster. Even most people, we probably talk faster than most people our age, you know.
Well, and I talk to kids all the time.
Right.
Whether it's teaching or my own children, right? So, and it's just how it is.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. You're not going to get the slow contemplative answer.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, because some people, I'm not naming names, but they get this whole persona. Oh, yeah, that's so spiritual. Thank you for sharing that. And I'm just, that's phony as far as I'm concerned.
Spiritual. We got to get rid of most of those words. Go ahead.
So we're recording this on Holy Saturday, right?
Yeah.
So
super important.
What do you guys do for Easter?
Because I've worked for the church and my wife is a musician, you know, it's always, this year's a little bit different because I'm working in more of an office-y job. But the, you know, as much as the family can gather, you know, some tie into the Triduum, as well as, you know, then an Easter gathering. Today I'm going after this axe throwing because Easter, you know, it's going to correspond. There's a wedding shower in the family. And so the girls are going there and some of the guys are going to go axe throwing.
But tomorrow they are?
Today.
Oh, today.
Yeah. And then tomorrow we'll go to church and then have dinner at my mother-in-law's house. Should be nice. How about you?
It's going to be big. Because when you have 9 kids, it's big, even if it's small.
Yeah, right.
But 2 of the kids won't be here because they live out of state. But everybody else will be here. Plus, Bonnie's family will all be here. That's a lot of people, right?
That's a lot of people. What are you serving? What's the main?
Well, our theme this year, we're doing a Mediterranean theme.
Wow.
Not because, you know, connecting it to Easter, because we were supposed to have a Mediterranean themed dinner for my mother-in-law's birthday. But she got sick, so we had to cancel. So everybody saved their stuff. So we're having lamb. Actually, we're having lamb.
Yeah.
And ham. We're having lamb and ham, both that were raised here on the farm.
For years, when Amy and I used to host Easter pretty regularly, now we go to her mom's house. It was lamb was the thing. I'd smoke a turkey, and then I'd roast a lamb and then just smoke it for a little while with the turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister, I know for one, would say it was her favorite meal of the year by far. I like lamb a lot.
Yeah, me too. And I went out and bought a bunch of Greek wine and actually some Metaxa, which is a Greek brandy.
Okay.
So, because our former pastor, God rest his soul, Father Cyril Atak, died before COVID, but he was like a grandfather to my kids and like a father to me and Bonnie.
Yeah.
And after church every Sunday, he'd say, all right, my son, let's go home." And we go into his directory, and we'd both have a shot of Metoxa.
Okay.
So my older kids will be sharing a shot of Metoxa
That's
with
great. That's
in
great.
Father Cyril's honor.
Yeah.
And
Very
Father Cyril
cool.
was Greek.
Okay. And how long ago did he pass away?
I can't 2019 maybe.
Okay. Who?
It was a
Had in
beautiful.
common, Father Charles McCarthy, a nonviolence guy, Emmanuel
No,
Charles
but Father
McCarthy.
no he, he no Father Emmanuel knew him. In fact, Father Emmanuel, get to,
Okay.
here's a great story, was came to the funeral, and a couple of my sons and I were both, I was kind of like a subdeacon, not really, no, unofficial subdeacon, and because I actually, through the last 2 years of Father Cyril's ministry, I was basically his right-hand man, and I distributed communion. He couldn't do
Yeah,
it.
you had mentioned, yeah.
You know, and even sometimes he would even have me read the gospel, which is a verboten, right? A lay person reading the gospel, it's not done. But he was so sick, he had, you know, and there was nothing else to do. But anyway, at his funeral, Father Cyril's funeral, Father Emmanuel was one of con celebrants, and there was a
Okay.
bishop there, and had to be six or seven priests and deacons.
Yeah.
And at the Kiss of Peace, which in the Eastern Rite, usually if only happens between the clergy, and I mean
Okay.
ordained clergy. And I was standing there, and a Father Emmanuel came over to me, and he gave me the kiss of peace. And while all the other clerics looked on in horror, because he's
So
breaking protocol.
in that tradition, on the other side of the what I always reduce to a proscenium arch, you know, but are you exchanging a piece amongst the people in the pews, but or is it just all it's only an altar thing?
No, it's just the clergy. Just
Interesting.
the clergy. You know, kind of like how the chalice used to be reserved to just the clergy in the Western
Right, right,
Church, right?
right. Yeah.
But then Father Emil comes up and gives me the kiss of peace, and he looks at me and says, "These guys have no idea what you did for this church. You
Wow.
deserve this more than they do." And actually, I think I mentioned he died not too long ago, Father
Oh,
Emmanuel.
yeah, right. Yeah, you're right,
You
right.
know,
Because he had
he
come to
was a
Geneseo.
good human
Courageous
being.
witness for, yeah,
And
nonviolence.
he was
So.
the one who was, you know, that Father Charles McCarthy, the peace priest, was his mentor.
Okay, gotcha. So
Yeah.
that's
And that's how I
McCarthy is
met
the one
that.
who came to Geneseo. Yep.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's how I met Charlie.
Yep. He was good friends with
And
a guy I talked to weekly.
you know the story about Charlie's daughter, right? Oh, I'll tell you, this is, you'll love this story. So Charlie, I don't think he's still even still alive, but he would goes around giving Christian nonviolence talks all over the world.
That's his thing. Yeah.
That is his thing. And he's been doing it for probably 50 years. And he's got seven kids, maybe nine. He got a bunch of kids. One of his kids, her name is Benedicta. And she was named after the religious name of Saint Edith Stein.
Right. I was going to guess
Right?
that, but
And I mean, Edith Stein, I adore Edith Stein. I dedicated one of my books to her. And what happened? So Benedicta, I think, is probably 30 now, around there.
Okay.
But when she was two, and you know how this goes with families, you know, the flu was going around the house, and they had, you know, the Tylenol, the liquid Tylenol was up on the counter, and little Benedicta crawled up on a chair and drank the whole bottle of Tylenol.
Wow.
And she rushed to the hospital. And her liver was breaking down, and Charlie was distraught, of course, but he was supposed to go someplace to give a talk, and just happened that next to his desk, the autobiography of Saint Teresa of Avila had fallen down, and who was the reason Edith Stein became a nun. That book became Catholic, even, or stopped being an atheist. And he opened it up, and it was open to, he picked it up, and it was open to a page where he had underlined when Saint Teresa is talking to Christ, and basically what Christ says, "You take care of my work, and I'll take care of yours."
Wow.
So Charlie decided, "I'm going to go do the talk anyway." And people started praying for the prayers of Edith Stein, and Benedicta got better like that. And there are, you can
Wow,
actually
wow.
still find them. For a while, you could find them on the internet with like a 2020 or some show where they interviewed the family and the doctors. And the doctor said, no, she was dying. She should be dead.
So,
I don't know why
wow,
she
okay.
did
So,
this.
wow, this wasn't like we didn't quite know what was going on. You know, she drank the Tylenol. It was a bad scene and he took off. No, there was people who corroborated that, you know, that
Right.
she was on death's door. Yeah, interesting.
And because of that miracle, that was the miracle that made Teresa or Edith Stein
Yeah.
a saint.
Oh, wow, wow,
And
wow.
get this. So Father Emmanuel didn't go, but his wife was there.
Yeah.
And she went to the canonization mass at and Benedicta was there, where St. John Paul II and Charlie concelebrated the mass.
Wow, wow, wow. That's
That's
all
kind
those
of
are
big.
wild stories. Yeah, that's
And
true.
that happened, that canonization happened while Father Emmanuel was our pastor back in the 90s, had to be.
And I mean no disrespect by this though, but like I wouldn't have gone to the talk, you know?
I wouldn't have either, but you know, Charlie thought Jesus was telling him, it's not up to you, it's up to me.
That's heavy. I'm trying to
Right.
process that to say,
That's how, I can't,
yeah.
I don't think I would either.
Yeah. And I'm
But,
trying to think of, you know, that, wow, that how it ever came to such a pass that, and
well,
I'm
you
not
know what?
judging him. I'm not judging him. I'm just, there's
And
certain
here's the thing.
situations where we know we can't do anything by our presence,
Right.
you know.
And I went to one of Charlie's talks, or it's like a weekend workshop one time. And the thing that really stuck with me, and I've been trying to incarnate it ever since, is he said, radical trust produces radical consequences.
Yeah.
You know,
Okay.
and I think that's what he was trying to live by, what he had been preaching. That's what I mean, I couldn't
Okay.
have done it, I think,
Yeah,
but.
radical trust. Fair enough. Fair enough. I think that's where we're going. It reminds me, again, one more. We're going to hyperlink a bit today, but Dietrich Bonhoeffer, you know, we've talked about the name. Right now he's surfacing for me pretty profoundly, but something I'd read about him that I did not know to be true is that he, you know, with this whole idea of a religionless Christianity, for what it's worth, he knew, as you and I've always supposed, though I don't think we've talked about it, is that, you know, so much of our language is just so jargony. And it reminds me of radical trust. So like Bonhoeffer knew that we had to start breaking apart these words too. Like he's talked to somebody, you know, Ivan Illich began his book, The Rivers North of the Future. And we'll save it for another whole episode, but he had to work on what the gospel is, right? So
Right.
we basically say like, Jesus Christ, my personal Lord and Savior. We want to say, slow down, bucko. What is
Yeah.
the Savior? Because what is salvation? That's one. What is Lord? What is, what are we being saved from? What are we to?
Right.
You know, a lot of us have a default setting that we do these things that are Catholic to get to a place called A. But anyhow, one of the ones, Bonhoeffer, in his prison letters, he didn't really get to breaking these down, but some of them were righteousness and so forth. But it was kind of like radical trust. You shared that story, and I wanted to get into it. But he did break down the word repentance a little bit. And you know what he came up with? And I think of young people and what we were talking about earlier regarding conversation. But he broke down repentance into ultimate honesty.
Wow.
Isn't
I
that
like that.
wild? Yeah.
You know what?
Isn't that...
I've been thinking about that exactly this week. You
Yeah.
know, I was thinking, because I've been, you know, you see stuff come across social media.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what? My problem has been for the last 30 years, I've been too tolerant. Because
I think our listeners are going to get a kick out of that one.
Well, I
it
mean,
finally
because,
dawned on me. I haven't chewed out enough people.
No, well, it's not that. But the thing is, it keeps you from being honest with people.
It can be, yeah. Yep, for
you
sure.
Know, sincere. You're not sincere. I'm tolerant. You know, I'm not honest.
Tolerance is the mask of forgiveness, right?
I don't know.
That's what Chesterton said, you know, that when we tolerate anybody, we never go through the fleshy experience of forgiving that person, which presupposes a disagreement. I can tell you the monastery, you would like a monastery because in order for these guys, again, it's not otherworldly, the radical experience of a monastery, you know, when I was very close to these Trappists, is they live their different temperaments. The only thing they have in common is they wear these same robes, basically, and they're Catholic. But they're in the radical experience of trying to work it out, right? So they have to be, consequently, they cannot be codependent. They have to be honest. Because if you make everything seem nice, though you hate it, it's going to come out and it's going to disrupt things. But it's a petri dish and becoming human. And that Dietrich Bonhoeffer would say, amen, amen, amen. But it really is, ladies and gentlemen. And that's a reason, I mean, it's really cool. If you live in New York City, people think that's diversity. No, you self-select for people who think exactly like you do. It's almost a universal phenomenon. The monastery, because it is the way I described it, it makes you think that the conversation in New York City, even amongst these silent, nominally like these quiet monks, the level of conversation is so powerful and it's so different. And it seems so rich that it makes the kind of like urbane, fake provincial, I mean, imperialism of like a city just seem so boring in comparison.
Yep. You know, I think there's, I see a correlation with that in families / teaching.
Say it again.
So bigger families.
Yeah.
And this is what I noticed with being a teacher, you know, so the kids who had brothers and sisters, they could get over stuff. They'd get in a squabble with one of the other kids in the class and it's over.
Yeah.
Whereas the kids who were only children, not almost every time, would get into a fight with another kid or a disagreement and it would be the end of the world. Because they're not used to forgiving people and putting up with people's shit, right?
Right.
And you see, but you also see that with parents, you know, so especially what if you get the older parents who wait till they're having children, they have just one. And that kid, I call that kid the project, because everything is what I remember. I saw an interview with Alec Baldwin, of all people, many years ago, talking about his daughter. And he was he married to Kim Basinger, whoever he was married to.
He was.
But they called their daughter Elvis.
Uh-huh.
I said, why? And the interviewer said, why do you call him Elvis? Because we're like those guys who used to hang around Elvis. What you won't do now, Elvis? Elvis won't go up. So that's what people do when they have one child.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
What you won't do, Elvis? Yeah. So Elvis is running things.
Yeah.
You know, and it's true. I see it all the time. But going back to Bonhoeffer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And his examination of the language we use. And that's what I love about the cost of discipleship,
right,
which is like reading Simone Weil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so scathing an indictment of all of us. But when he talks about cheap grace, right?
Yeah. Unpack that for our listeners.
I'm bathed in the blood of the Lamb.
Right.
That's cheap grace, you know? And he talks, I'm interested in costly grace. Yeah, that kind of grace doesn't cost you anything.
No, but it's also what he diagnosed as religion, right? Kind of hocus pocus. These these words that aren't, they haven't landed. They're not touching wood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that Jesus Christ, my personal Lord and Savior. That is the profoundest confession somebody can make. But what does it mean when the words themselves are hovering, you know, 50,000 feet above the way that we can viscerally take them in? In any respect, right?
Or if it's scrolled across a t-shirt or a bumper sticker, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, game over.
Yeah.
Because that's you know, what Heidegger talked about, the impoverishment of language doesn't mean anything anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
How can we find words that...
And doesn't that, again, to go back to repentance being ultimate honesty, you know, that's the vulnerability, to be totally honest with somebody else in front of you, right? And to go deeper and deeper, you realize, even if you start to make that a goal, you start to realize how many of the words coming out of your mouth and my mouth are still kind of untethered, you know. But what if we could find, or isn't in an inverse way, you know, Soloviev says in that book, The Meaning of Love, that we've discussed on this, you know, that especially Barfield in his introduction, that he says, you know, the next eon, the eon I think we're trying to be born into now, he said the human being is called upon to kind of harness and domesticate, not domesticate, but use love in the same way that grunts became words and a way of communicating. You know, do you think there's a connection between some of the stuff we're talking about radical conversation, non-codependent, being clear, and what maybe Soloviev was trying to intimate, that, you know, to know is to love. I was at a great event last night at Tenebrae service, and one of the young girls was talking about, it was great. It was just great. You know, a young teenager was witnessing and was saying that her mother had, you know, kind of made her see the connection between knowing and to love and to know.
Well, I think so. I think I may have talked about this before, but even before I was a Waldorf teacher, I had a lot of friends who were Hare Krishnas. There was a huge Hare Krishna.
You mentioned that. But you were never a Hare Krishna yourself.
No. But
you
I used
feel
to go to
drawn to it? Okay.
I had Sunday feast. I would always go. Food was great. The people are super nice.
Yeah.
You know, they talk about Eastern philosophy,
What
which
was
is
their
Eastern.
downside? I just don't know much about the entity.
I don't know. I mean, I was never that into it. But I didn't
They
have
weren't
any,
into
my
a
own
doomsday
experience with
cult
them,
or
there were
anything.
no downsides of my experience with them.
Oh, yeah. There was no
Yeah.
doomsday cult. There was never like
No, they were full
massive
of
conspiracy. Yeah.
they're you know, it's bhakti yoga. They're full of bliss, right? They're
Yeah,
happy,
right.
right? And but one of the things, and
Interesting.
if you're out there, I don't know if he's still alive. I hope he is, because I love that guy. His name was Paul Lucrecchio, but his religious name was Pandu. And he was
What
one
was
of the
his
people.
religious name again?
Pandu.
Pandu, I
And
like it.
Pandu, if you know the Bhagavad Gita, you know, Krishna's in the chariot with what's his name?
We all know it. We all know it.
It'll come to me.
Starts with
But
R. Starts with R.
Pandu is the guy's father. So he's
Okay.
one of the sons of Pandu. So
Okay.
my friend's name is Pandu. And one of the things he told me that they had been taught, right? It was part of the teaching of the Krishna movement. And I'll never forget this, because I live by it to a degree, that one of the forms of love is to reveal your mind to another.
Yeah, right. Wow. Yeah.
Right? And I think it's true. And that's what I mean by being not being tolerant. I was being or being a kind of phony tolerant, or just the tolerance where you just shut up and don't say anything because you're afraid you might offend somebody.
Now, what venues were you being this way?
Pardon me?
Like, what venues did you find yourself acting in this way? Because you're a pretty straight shooter, I think, with whoever you are. What, like, I think our listeners might wonder, like, where were you having these kind of artificial
Well, it happens
conversations?
all the time, you know, or you kind of self-monitor, right?
Well, we all do, I guess, but okay.
Especially in academic circles.
Fair.
You know, because those aren't circles that appreciates clear
No,
language
it's the
and
opposite.
forthright speech.
Yeah. But
They
you're
just aren't.
yeah, but what you said about that Hare Krishna art of conversation, it's just so
And I
true.
love
I
that.
think again, that's where we're I think that's the zone where we are now, 2,000 years after the incarnation. You know, it's in this real as we might say it this way, kind of like Sophia versus Ahriman, but we're seeing so many young people interface, right? This is a big thing for like Ivan Illich. If our metaphor for the self is a computer, ergo we shut down when we die, we no longer have the intransitive verb of like, you know, dancing into death. But that we find out so many people, when they think it's conversation, they're interfacing like, my parents are so liberal. My parents are so, this is how you see a lot of people talking. And
Right.
what's really, so the worst being the corruption of the best, it's, and where we see evil, let's stop using the word evil for everything. Maybe this is the heart of evil, the difference between interfacing and like conversation and interest. Mm-hmm. But
Right.
this, you know, Goethean art of conversation, all these people that
Right.
our listeners know that we admire, Novalis, you know, they thought it could all be done. And so it's that same way, Novalis with the blue flower, this idea of his love with Sophie. So much of that is based on conversation and getting to know somebody. Adam knew Eve, right? You know, this type of thing.
Right. And I think that's you know, one of the impoverishments of language, as you were just alluding to, right, is that some people they don't reveal their minds as a form of love because they don't know their minds. So
Right.
they speak
Cute.
ideology, right? They speak ideology instead. So you're not really speaking to a person that way.
Right.
You know, though you would
And we
like
know
to.
it right
The thing
away
is,
when you're having a conversation, you realize you're not speaking to a person. And it's not going to change, folks. When you find yourself in a conversation, it usually doesn't change in the course of that conversation. You have to learn to get out pretty quickly and politely, I think.
and
I
I
don't
would
know.
suggest, this might be controversial, but when you and when we do it too, I mean, I think when people who speak ideology, or you can't penetrate to their being, you're interfacing with a spiritual entity. It could be a demon, right? But it's
Right.
not the person. It's a form of, so in a way you're dealing with a form of possession.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's a possession of an idea,
Now, people on the
which
right.
also has a being behind it.
Yeah. You know, a lot of our listeners too could be imaging. There's that famous, she's memed a lot, this young girl screaming. I might have think It was taken during Trump's first inauguration.
The Trump one.
Yeah.
That's a funny meme.
The first inauguration, you know, that lady's face is melting down. But then people, so they know what we're speaking of. There's an egregore. I mean, there's something there. But there's just as many, you know, on the alt-right, they say it's getting, elements are getting so dark, you know, on that, that when people use that to hate on so much, so let's think of that image of the young girl. There's a whole movement on the right where they hate on that so much that they're getting backed into a very similar corner on the right where something dark is overtaking them, you know?
You know what our boy William Blake would say, right?
It's,
They became what they beheld.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the more brilliant psychological statements I've ever encountered.
Mm-hmm.
They became what they beheld.
Yeah. Lately, I've been using his truth consolidates error a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You see things going on, you know, but we don't know where we're going to move, you know, corporately, as a world, individually, housing prices, you know, everybody feels paralyzed. But as we're doing it, you can see, you know, everybody's looking for a vast plan. But if we do the next right thing, you start to see that, like, the error that we fight against is becoming so comical. You know, it's like mm-hmm. a pimple coming to a head or something. It's becoming such a parody of itself that we have to keep on moving forward day by day. But truth consolidates error more than the idea of truth just has to, like, beat the living shit out of error, like, repeatedly.
Right.
You know, just keep on, because that's consequentialist thinking, you know, that we have to come up. They're always strategizing for the next thing. Where mm-hmm. the correct spirituality is, like, have courage and do the next right thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what Jesus tells the apostles. Don't worry about what you're going to say.
Right.
The Spirit will speak through you.
You mean we're not supposed to have a focus group, Mike, and have some committee meetings about what we're going to say?
That's right.
Yeah.
We're finding that with this demographic of Jesus, we could reach Jesus. Well, it's the same thing that happened to St. Francis, right?
Say more.
When St. Francis went to convert the Sultan, and he was gone for a month or two.
Mm-hmm.
And he came back to Assisi, and in his absence, the monks said, we made a few changes, and they got all this stuff, you know, and they had like a corporate board or whatever, right? Board of directors. And Francis just came in the room, looked at all this stuff they had, sat down on the floor and threw ashes on his food.
Yeah.
And he would never live in the monastery again.
Mm-hmm. What would you call that? That formation, like, so in one sense, they formed a company and in his absence, for one, they try to consolidate it's almost like they try to control.
It was Franciscan Inc.
Right. But what verb would you, what spiritual term would you use to say, you know, this thing descended on them, you know, this spirit?
The egregore.
Yeah.
Was the egregore of the Catholic Church or whatever it was. Okay. Well, I think the thing is, I mean, if you think about this, when people, you know, when two or more are gathered in my name.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, I think that's an absolute spiritual principle. But I also think that when groups form together, there is another spirit that wants to get involved.
Well, that helps so much. So, you know, when I said Dietrich Bonhoeffer, that he, when he looked at repentance through the notion of ultimate honesty, I knew. And I'd submitted it and it was published in Jesus, the Imagination. But I've done a lot of work on salvation, just like you're saying, that in the Zacchaeus story, they say Zacchaeus, because what you were talking about there, Michael, was a crowd phenomenon, right?
Right.
Jesus, I say it clearly now, and I gave retreat talks on this Lent, that a sensitive reading of the gospel, and you find this a lot in this book, you know, one of my all-time favorites, Morning Light by John Sullivan, I mentioned. But you get a sense, Sullivan gets it, that like Jesus could be talking to 5 to 7 people. And it could be a community and they hear the gospel, but they could morph into a crowd. And then he goes to the other side of the lake. The gospel can only be preached to people. It can't be preached to a crowd. It's politicians mm-hmm. that are very good at working with crowds. But mm-hmm. anyhow, for your illustrious journal, Jesus, the Imagination, I've tried to rehabilitate a word that's kind of come untethered, but it's the word salvation. And we can find it. It's not used much in the gospels. Where we do find it is kind of in the follow-up to the story about Zacchaeus, everybody knows, the small person who climbed the tree.
Yeah.
But the story that is most memorable to people is probably most memorable because it's needed in our time. Zacchaeus could not see Jesus, it says in every translation, because of the crowd. Boom, mm-hmm. it's dead for us. In the article I wrote too, you know, Orpheus was known to like have rocks dance for him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an issue on Christ Orpheus. But Zacchaeus too, you know, they're chiding him for this as followers. Like, why'd you invite this man to your house, or why'd you? And they're chiding Jesus, and Jesus said, "I've come to seek and save what is lost." So there's salvation, friends. Let's rehabilitate that word. It means one by one, as Christians, followers of Jesus, we have to rescue people from this horrible thing called crowd phenomenon, where they interface with people. Salvation in our time is being rescued from the crowd. And finally, they keep on telling Jesus, "No, the egregore, follow the egregore." And he says, "I won't, or the stones themselves will cry out." Elias Canetti, in his famous book of poetry on crowds, it's there in the work of John Cooper Powis. When crowds form, they're as dense as stones. They're as dense as stones. We know in Peter got caught up in a crowd phenomenon when he denied Jesus three times. You know, he just became one with 100%, like Rene Girard gets at this. So in our time, salvation, we don't need to think of it any further for a long time, as one by one rescuing people from ideology, from crowd phenomenon. Right.
And this is actually something Rudolf Steiner was on to as well, because I can't remember where I read it, but it's been a long time. That one place he writes, or something, he was recorded that he said that he wished he could have a new name for anthroposophy every day.
Right, right, right.
Because people get so stuck in what they think the word means, right?
Yeah.
And that kind of ossification, I think that it's not just true in anthroposophy, it's true in every situation. I mean, how do you keep it alive? How do you not let those forces of death come in and start to, you know, if not kill, at least insulate or somehow compromise the livingness that's there, right?
And how tensile is your word sophiology? Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you think it's going to go for your word sophiology? How, like, you know, she by her nature might help kind of push this thing off, but she could be commodified pretty quickly, or where do you think that?
I'm sure. Well, yeah. So you look up sophiology, there's a lot of really crazy shit up on sophiology on the internet. But so this is for myself though. And so when I've been interviewed about sophiology on podcasts or whatever, they always ask me, "What is sophiology?" And I'm like, I don't really have a definition, because definitions kill, right? And
yeah,
even
you're consistent.
There's somebody I saw, he posted someplace, I can't remember, it was a book review. So I read this whole book on sophiology, so like the submerged reality. And I finally get to the end, and he guy says he doesn't know what it means. But that's, I don't want to come to a definition, right?
No, right, right, right.
You know, the dictionary is the graveyard of words.
Yeah.
But I see, so there's like the crazy feminist version of sophiology. It's all about, which is very Luciferic, if you ask me. And then there's the kind of an orthobro approach to sophiology, which just wants to turn into an interesting philosophical school.
Yeah, a new devotion to Mary or something.
I hate that. You know, to me, that those both killeth the letter. Right?
I think the closest word, it's nice that it's Greek and we don't overuse it, like metaxu kind of captures some of it. But again, because it, but again, it's fun to see, like, you know how they do those word things where some words are big and small? That'd be, you know, there's metaxu is a word we could throw in there. Phenomenology is where a word we could throw in there.
And you know who I'm gonna plug my friend's book right now. So Stephen Knepper wrote Wonder Strike. Steve, it's a great book. I know Steve watches this.
All right, cool.
But Steve, actually he sent this to me. I'm halfway through finally. It's a beautiful book, but it's about the thought of William Desmond.
I saw the subtitle.
Yeah. And Desmond is big on the metaxu, right? Between.
Right, right. See, I haven't read him. I know his name.
Yeah, he's really good. I mean, you'd like him. Yeah. You would certainly like him.
Bill, David Cayley has interviewed him. You know, we'll have David back on soon.
And he actually wrote the introduction to my book, what's it called? The Incarnation of the Poetic Word.
William Desmond did?
He did.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And, which I was surprised he said yes when I asked him, or my publisher asked him. I think I was too afraid to ask.
Yeah,
put in the spot.
If I think of William Desmond, if I think of the Cayley interviews where he interviewed Desmond, could Desmond be associated with the Radical Christianity group a little bit? You know, or I'm sorry, Radical Orthodoxy. Was he tangential to that a little bit? trying to think
He's
what series he was
tangential,
in.
but I mean, he's definitely adjacent.
Okay.
So he knows. I mean, he's friends with Milbank, and
Yeah, right.
so yeah, he was at a conference at Notre Dame, maybe 8 years ago. It was before Marigold Flows. And so I went, and I just went to just check it out. But Milbank was there, David Bentley Hart was there, Desmond was there, a
Okay.
bunch of other people. Who else was there? I can't remember who else was there. And so he fits in with that crowd, right?
Yeah. And again, those are, it's a nice crowd that hovers in the
It's a nice
constellation of
crowd.
sociology. Milbank is interestingly on sociology.
Yeah.
When he reviews things, he gets it. So let me, because Michael, when we, I texted you yesterday, I've been reading something about the eclipse, and we don't need to do too much with this, but that was, I texted you yesterday and said 10:30 tomorrow on the eclipse. And then I
And
hit
we've been talking about
record the
everything
cloud.
else.
Yeah. But the I saw a tweet. It was from that Bishop Strickland, who's, Pope Francis kind of bitch slapped about some, but and I forgot the zone of totality goes down to Tyler, Texas. But he was tweeting about the eclipse and this could be a wonderful thing. And I thought he was sending people because I live in one of the zones of totality right in upstate New York. And we're expected all these street signs like you see in, we used to only hear about it in places like Orwell, but it's right now. Municipalities are saying these signs at you all the time. Smoke weed and you die. But it's just that we're going to face gridlock here around the Finger Lakes in Rochester for the day of the eclipse because we're in the zone of totality.
Oh, are you? Yeah, we're not. We're
Yeah.
just a little bit north of the zone of
Okay.
totality.
But it sounds like a Woodstock type event, So when Bishop Burb Strickland was just wishing people, we could pray for them. I don't know. I probably disagree with that guy and everything, but I wondered if this is a bigger, like this is a thing. It's a thing,
You know
and
what?
then, it's a thing, I think.
I think, well, it is a thing.
Yeah.
So, and this, I usually, as an astrologer, I don't put a whole lot into eclipses
Right.
unless it's hit somebody's point someplace or somebody's planet or whatever. But so actually, when I wrote a bunch of astrological predictions in January, I didn't even mention the eclipses, but I wasn't paying attention to it. But then what happened a couple weeks ago? Our mutual acquaintance, Mike Sullivan.
How do
He
I know
messaged
Mike
me.
Sullivan? I don't know him. Who's
You
Mike?
knew, you do know him. You do know
Okay.
him. You
Okay.
know him from
Oh yeah,
Facebook.
I do. I do. I do. I do. Yes.
And
He
he
has a
actually,
hat in his profile. Yeah.
yes. And he actually, I'm the godfather to his daughter, Sophia.
Seems like a great guy.
He is a great guy. But he messaged me. He said, "Hey, you've been following Robert Powell," another former guest of the Regeneration Podcast.
That guy's brilliant.
And I haven't been listening to his podcast. And so Mike sent me a couple of links.
He doesn't speak
And
fast.
no, but Robert is
Yeah.
a, he's a real astrologer. I'm like
He
a
is.
serious astrologer. And, but Robert was talking about the eclipses and he, though he was saying, I don't want to be a prophet, it's a sketchy business to get into, but it's interesting that the path of the eclipse in, was it 2017?
Yeah.
Is, but the path of that one with the path of this one
It's
forms
around
an
northern
X.
Ohio or like a southern Ohio or something. The cross
Forms an
kind
X,
of.
well, it forms an X, and the X meets in southern Illinois, actually.
Okay.
And Mike lives in Illinois. He was thinking about going down to watch it
Oh, I see. It's cool.
from there. And so I listened to what Robert had to say, and I've known Robert not well, but for 30 years. I think I first called him on the phone maybe 1997, maybe earlier when he was living in Germany at the time. I don't know how I got his phone number, but I got his phone number. So I'm going to talk to this guy because Robert, for those of you who might not know, is the translator of the English edition of Meditations on
Meditations.
the Tarot. Super important book. But so anyway, Robert was talking about this and he said, I'm not making predictions, but and we can think about this in terms of a poetic metaphysics that he thought that the cross being inscribed across the United States in these extraordinarily dark times is actually a good sign. And he even suggested, it might be that people have the experiences of Christ on a mass scale. On and this will be on April 8th. where the solar eclipse happens. But what he didn't talk about, and he may talk about someplace else. So I started thinking about it, and there was a lunar eclipse this week, Mike. I don't know if you
Right,
heard.
right, right. No, I didn't.
On the feast of the Annunciation, which I think for some reason that the Roman Church moved it to the following week. But the Feast of the Annunciation, it's the most important feast.
But
In
where
a
they
way.
moved it because of like in Holy Week and everything, it's going to be on the day of the eclipse,
They're
which is
moving it to the
interesting.
day of the eclipse?
Yeah, it's February 8th.
April 8th?
I'm sorry, April 8th. Yeah.
They moved it to April. Wow, that's
Yeah, that's
heavy.
my understanding. Right. It's heavy. It's
That is
heavy.
heavy. I
Just
thought they
Google
just
that.
moved
You'll
it
see
a
people
week.
are writing on that. They're writing on it, like Graham
They
Greene's
moved it to
essay on
that.
the Assumption and the Bomb and
Wow.
stuff. Yeah.
I need a minute, man. You know what I'm saying?
I
that's
think I'm
heavy.
right. Yeah,
If
that's
they moved
heavy.
it to the day of the eclipse, I'll have to check that out.
Michael, I
That's
think they moved it to the day of the eclipse.
because that means the lunar eclipse happened on the real feast, and
Yeah.
the solar eclipse happened. Man, if that's the truth. But anyway.
Yeah, I think
You
so.
know, maybe our listeners know this, maybe they don't, but the 25th of March, the Feast of the Annunciation, was for the longest time in Christendom the day that the calendar year changed. And the reason that was because that's the day in many things. So it was also thought to be the traditional day, the actual historical day of the crucifixion.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So it's the Annunciation, it's also the crucifixion.
Okay.
It was also thought to be the last day of creation from Genesis, the day on which God rested. So, if you know this book, I'm selling books today, Mike. Here's another book, really good book,
Okay.
"Winters in the World" by Eleanor Parker, who's a British scholar. She's a
Don't have
medieval.
that. Yeah.
A journey through the Anglo-Saxon year. And what she says in here, and I think it's brilliantly put, is for especially through the Middle Ages in Christendom, March 25th was seen as the birthday of time. And also, as we know, in Lord of the Rings, that's the day of the destruction of the ring.
Right. Okay, I didn't know
So that's a big deal. It's
that.
a big fat deal.
Yeah.
And if the solar eclipse is happening on the moved date of the Annunciation, that is mind blowing. But anyway, so I've been thinking a lot about this myself, and I started thinking
New
in a
date of the Annunciation.
poetic metaphysics type of way
According to
that
Britannica,
with this
the Feast of
lunar
the
eclipse
Annunciation,
on
one of the
Monday,
principal feasts of the
on the
Christian Church,
25th,
is celebrated on March 25th. Gotcha. The link you, yeah, that Google didn't help me right there. Cool. Go ahead.
With the lunar eclipse on March 25th and the solar eclipse coming up. So I looked up on looked up some Steiner thoughts. And this is one of the things Robert was talking about in his podcast as well. But he calls it the incarnation of Sorath. And Sorath is actually comes from
He's a
Gematria,
bad dude.
Hebrew. Well, it comes from Hebrew Gematria and it equals 666, right? And so and Robert is really kind of pessimistic about the state of the world right now.
Yeah.
And he talks about the same people that I call
He's a
them the
Klaus
archons.
Schwab and yeah. He's
With
brilliant on
Schwab
that stuff.
and
Yeah.
Soros and all these evil
Trudeau and
bastards,
Bill Gates.
Bill Gates. And Robert also talks about how much he really loves the people of the United States and the United States. He just hates the government, I think. And he lived here for a long time in California. And maybe his kids were even born here, I don't know. But I think what we an interesting thing to look at is with the lunar eclipse coming before, because often the lunar eclipse will come after 2 weeks after the solar eclipse. On the Feast of the Annunciation, in a way, what we're seeing with these two eclipses is it's almost a celestial or cosmic image of chapter 12 of the book of Revelation, right? With
Yeah, I
the
saw
woman
your
clothed with
beast.
the sun and with the with the moon in her feet and crowned with 12 stars. But here's the other thing, right? So if you know that story from Revelation, that's when the dragon comes after her, right? and chapter 12. But get this, and this blew my mind when I found out this out. So on the day of the eclipse, the solar eclipse on April 8th, first of all, there will be a comet will be in the vicinity, not too far from the sun. I mean, it won't be right next to it. It'll be, I think, 20 degrees. So, but like you'll be able to see it if it's clear, Mike. So what'll happen, solar eclipse happens, and then you'll be able to see, and I can't remember which direction it is from the sun. You'll probably be able to see this comet, which is called, get this, was it the, it's called the Devil Comet.
Really?
Or the Demon Comet, what's it called? Because it has two horns, which actually they're two, two tails, but it looks like it's got horns coming out of it. So it's like it's depicting
everything.
Exactly what's in the Book of Revelation in the sky.
Uh-huh.
And get, I don't know if you heard this too. This is the craziest shit I've heard. The U.S. government is planning some missile tests in front of the moon during the eclipse.
No, I haven't heard that. No.
I just sent this to Therese yesterday because I said, what the hell is going on? So let me, I'll read you the headline of this news story. And this is a mainstream news source. So it's not, you know, some alt media thing. So here's what I sent to Therese. Another, I'm just mentioning guests.
Yeah.
And actually,
you got to have her back. She comes, a new CD coming out.
And she's got a new,
we're going to
have her back soon.
Yep.
So girl, we thinking about you.
Absolutely.
So here's what I said to Therese the other day. And I said, who are these people? Coming in. Come on, baby. Open up. There it is. It's from Newsweek.
Okay.
Which is, that's about as mainstream as you get, right?
Yep.
Solar eclipse to see NASA send rockets into moon's shadow.
Huh.
What the heck?
Yeah.
And also, while you have the Demon Comet at the same time. I just need, ladies and gentlemen, I just need time to process all this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you've got a lot of stuff going on.
Well, that's a lot going on right there.
Yeah, and I could be wrong on the holy day and everything, but I think that's
the other
case.
Thing, another weird astrological thing is happening. So, April 22nd, is it? The 19th? There will be a conjunction of Jupiter and Uranus, which I've written about before, which is like a summer of love kind of vibe, right?
Right.
You know, it's revolution, but it's love at the same time. But it also happens on when Passover happens this year.
Hmm.
It coincides with Passover.
And that's late April?
April 22nd.
I think we could use another one of those vibes. You know, I've been thinking a lot about that. You know, when that movie Jesus Freaks came out this summer, that was interesting. There was some good stuff in there. You know, that basic hippie movement that got co-opted, you know, into something of the baby boomer phenomenon, obsession with like
yuppies,
financial security. But, it, you know, there's obviously there's great stuff there. You know, like how about people who care for peace, the environment, you know, kind of a, we need, again, so many things come back with a difference, a return with a difference. And the baby boomer thing, I mean, not the baby boomer, the hippie thing was great. You know, I'm close to Woodstock up here. The Casco Mountains, there's a vibe down there, Ithaca, New York.
Well, I was just a little kid at the time, but I did have some contacts with Jesus freaks.
Okay.
Back in the day. And you know who the most famous Jesus freak is?
Trying to think. No.
There's two of them. Eric Clapton.
Okay.
Eric Clapton was a Jesus freak.
Didn't know that.
He still is. I mean, he's a very religious dude.
Yeah.
And that's why, in fact, so you know who else is a Jesus freak from way back is Steve Winwood.
Wow. Okay, yeah.
And remember when Steve Winwood and Eric Clapton were in a band called Blind Faith? Just recorded one really good album. But that's where they have the song, The Presence of the Lord. Which is a really great song.
Yeah.
We should link that. It's like a perfect Holy Saturday song.
It's called The Presence of the Lord. I don't know if I'll even, I might get be able to get this up today, but it might not. Well, I've got some daughters in town, but
it's really,
I'll look for it.
I mean, it's perfect for it's an Easter mood thing.
Okay, so if it made it up in the Easter certainly the octave of Easter to be up.
Yeah,
and people
we're
cool.
good.
Yeah.
So, but that, yeah, I think, but I love it when I kind of love that moment in history, you know, and of course, just like everything else, it gets ruined by the bad guys.
Right.
Just like, you know, the peace and love thing got ruined by the yuppies, which, you know, they were co-opted by corporatism, right? In fact, you look now, the people you would least likely to be pro-war 30 years ago are the people who are pro-war.
So how about this? The yuppie co-optation is the same thing as the Franciscan movement. I mean, the hippie co-optation is the same thing as the Franciscan movement you told moments ago, agreed?
Yeah. That's
so maybe
what happened to groups.
Third time's the charm. Another hippie vibe that doesn't get co-opted, right?
How are you going to keep it real, right?
Yeah.
And that's one of the underpinning themes of mythologies of the wild god. Is it how do you not let it become stale, right? or corrupted, right? Yeah.
Who do you think has written on that subject well? You know, it's hard to commodify it. It's one of those things. It's like the flow. It's the ideology is its enemy.
Well,
you know,
Steiner to a degree,
we could do an apophatic approach to it, I suppose.
The Steiner did to a degree, but the thing is, every group that Steiner touched is turned to shit.
Right.
I mean, really, they're horrible. They were actually some of the worst people during COVID.
Yeah.
The Anthroposophical Society and Waldorf Education.
Uh huh.
They were some of the absolute worst. And I actually, I just got an email, was it yesterday or this week, I got an email from somebody saying exactly that, you know, that, you know, you won't believe what happened to the Waldorf movement. And I'm like, oh, yes, I will.
That's we should do a whole show on that. Like, I'll start giving it some thought, like those things. I bet you there's a connection there between what we're saying, what I call the increasing incarnation of the word, or this whole idea of like the importance of conversation phenomenology, you know, the keeping it real, you know, that has to do with embodiment, all these things, you know, it really does. It really does. It's not just, you know, living in the now. It's not just spacing out and living in the now, but it has to do with work, all those things. But it's like, we better find out that way. Go ahead.
It has to do with ever making things, you know, behold, I make all things new.
Yeah, right.
And I think that's part of it, right? And this is why I know I have some people might think I have a problem with tradies and ortho bros, and I don't. The sentiment I get,
I don't.
I love tradition.
I love,
but the thing is, I mean, how do you? And this, even Ezra Pound. I mean, he's probably a bad example, but Ezra Pound's idea with poetry, right? Make it new.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, how do you make religion new while having it also be grounded in a tradition, right?
Right, right.
That's the challenge. But the problem is the novelty we do see in religion is usually just stupid.
Right.
You know? Right. Just it's embarrassing, Lisa, because it's commodified, right? It's it's a brand, right?
Right.
And I think that's for my own experience, you know, the danger with social media is turning oneself into a brand.
Right.
Right. You're just another commodity among others. Right.
The new is a brand even before it's there. I get that. But do you think there's something again, like how do we split the difference there? I was in like a 10-week cohort on Wednesday night, which was another reason it was sometimes harder for you and I to get together. But it was really cool. It was kind of on preaching. And you saw it was about preaching from personal experience. And you saw on one side, people, you could say the conservatives didn't find it natural to speak from personal experience. This ties into a theme today. And then I got a sense, if you were looking at the Catholic Church, kind of on the progressive left, there's no better closeness to the individual, the person. It's just the political causes, right? So the preaching for a progressive priest was all about politics. We see the whole notion of Pope Francis and synodality. There's a confusion on the right that people think it just releases in all the forces of chaos. Then there's an illusion on the left. They think it's just about getting your political project, if it's women's priesthood or something, done. You know, both sides seem to miss the notion, the centrality of listening. I'm coming out of quiet, you know, the bottom up, things like that. You know, and I wonder, does that have something to do with keeping it real? You know, that there's a, you know, there's a danger to the right. There's a danger to the left, of course.
I think, I mean, how are you going to make things ever new, right? Here's the problem with both of those sides you're just talking about. Both of their problems are they think someone's going to get it wrong. Right?
Say it
Somebody's
again.
Getting it wrong, or someone's going to get it wrong.
Yeah.
You can't do that. That's wrong. Right?
Two things. Well, about that though, are they, if somebody's going to get it wrong, are they more interested in like schooling the other side, like schooling the libtards?
It's
or
just a,
is that
it's a
the
desire
premise of what
for
you're saying?
control.
Okay, right. Yeah.
It's a desire for control, and it's an unconscious admission of insecurity.
Yeah.
And you see this, see this with orthopros, for instance, but also tradies who want to, they cling to the traditions of the church because they think it's going to save them. It's going to save the culture, right? It's going to save the world.
Yeah.
But lefties do too. They're clinging to social justice or their interpret whatever they think, right? That's going to save the world. But what underwrites both of those is an insecurity if I'm wrong. And then that's why they want to demonize other people, because you're getting it wrong, right?
Yeah. And I think
and
it's an
neither one of
insecurity
those,
about the world, don't you? Each
neither
side
one
have
of
their own
those,
insecurity about engaging with the real.
Neither one of those is, neither one of those is living in a prophetic space. So I think, pardon me, to live in a prophetic space is to, in a way, to be in touch with the world. I mean, with the actual, with the Sophianic
Agreed.
reality.
Agreed.
And you know, you were asking earlier, who was written about this? Well, he doesn't do it in a direct way, but the only person I can think who did it consistently and in a big way, and who wasn't afraid of getting it wrong, was William Blake.
I'm going to add John Cowper Powys to that.
Yeah.
You know, again, and again, it's a weird corpus, but yes. And to be honest, there's all these papers that say, like, in an article I wrote on Powys for the first issue of your journal, there's a quote in that article that says, everybody knows between the two that the connections between them could fill libraries. You know, one comes much later and the corpus is completely unwieldy. But you're right. William Blake was, you know, he never broke character on that one.
Well, he was always sincerely striving. So,
and that's the category
Blake,
for Goethe too.
I think so. And if you read Blake in The Marriage of Heaven and Hell, and compare that Blake to the Blake of Jerusalem, two different guys, but still the same guy. Well, you can see he was. I think when he wrote Marriage of Heaven and Hell, he was around 30.
Okay.
And he was dealing with his inherited Christian tradition, which was also a crazy Christian tradition of Swedenborgianism. Right? So he was wrestling with those traditions and that egregore, I think, in The Marriage of Heaven and Hell. But then he went through life, and then when he gets to Jerusalem, this is a different, almost a different Blakean dispensation that he comes to, right? Where his understanding of Christ in Jerusalem is, I mean, it's more than liberating. It's imaginative. It's every right,
right,
but it's
right,
all
right.
Grounded in forgiveness, right? I'm the greatest sinner in the world, yet Christ forgives me.
Yep, I forgive you. You forgive me. This is the bread. This is the cup. Mm-hmm. This is the wine. Yep. Fascinating. It was a great conversation. Again, having not talked
well,
to you,
Mike and I don't talk. We can talk for about 8 hours.
Yeah, I just before again, if people if they didn't hear the beginning, I just before Michael came on, I could see he was signing on. I just started hitting record, and I'll take out the first 8 seconds, which would be silence. Then there you were, and we just began today's show. Thank you, for everybody. You know, happy Easter to all the listeners.
Happy Easter.
I hope to
Christ
get this
risen
up tonight or tomorrow, and happy the whole octave of Easter and the whole Easter season, which is longer than the season of Lent. Yeah. And God bless you all. And I'm going to hit stop. Thanks for listening to the Regeneration Podcast.